Broadcasting to New York City, Los Angeles, Chicago, Sydney, London, and around the world, this is Trumpet Radio Live.
Thanks for joining us here on Trumpet Radio Live, 101.3 KPCG, and we're online at kpcg.fm, live link at thetrumpet.com. A lot coming up on this Thursday edition. We've got some numbers on who exactly has entered the U.S. since the travel ban was struck down. Some interesting numbers to take a look at there. Also, more problems for Facebook Live. People can stream whatever they want, but they don't always stream good things. And the athlete as activist. This is a trend that's taking off. That and more this edition, Trumpet Radio Live.
This is Trumpet Radio Live.
Thanks for joining us here on Trumpet Radio Live, 101.3 KPCG, online, kpcg.fm, live link at thetrumpet.com as well. And if you would like to follow us on Twitter, you can do that at kpcgfm. Also, any emails you have, send those along to comments at kpcg.fm. I'm Dwight Falk and Grant Turgeon here today as well. And might as well just tell everybody, admit the truth, we went and watched the Thunder game. Not together, but we ended up in the same part of the building.
We were just one row apart.
Yeah. So it was a pleasant surprise to see a familiar face rooting for the Thunder.
That was great.
And you caught a T-shirt.
I did. I threw it to your son without a second's hesitation.
Yeah, that was really cool. He was excited about that.
I have so many free shirts from all the playoff games over the years. I didn't need to look at it and analyze if I liked it enough so I could keep it. I just figured I didn't need any more.
you just did the good deed. And it's funny because T-shirts don't usually make it up that high into the 300s.
Yeah.
You got to be in the right spot at the right time.
We should probably clarify. It was from the T-shirt cannon from on the court, and we were in the top level. It wasn't from people just coming into our section and tossing them to us.
Yeah, it was a pretty epic thing. there's this older guy and his, I think, wife, and they were sitting down a couple rows, and we got there a little early, and they were also there at that same time, and they were like the whole before the game, they were waving and trying. Anytime that the prize blimp comes around, they were waving at it, and there's no way they were going to get a T-shirt, so they were trying really hard for probably 45 minutes before the game, all through during the game, and you nonchalantly catch a T-shirt. And they were trying so hard.
I actually used to try hard like that, and I've given up the past several years. I've not even bothered standing up to try and get them hardly.
Yeah, you know, I'm so amazed by how people will go crazy for really trivial prizes.
Yeah.
You know, you're at a sporting event, and all of a sudden they say, hey, if you catch this Frisbee, you get a free personal pizza. And people are diving, you know. I'm like, it's like, what, like $3? I mean, it's not... You're not getting that much. But the guy, they always do the stuff in between the breaks. And the guy that he had a chance to shoot from half court for $20,000, he almost made it, hit the rim.
Yeah, he hit the front rim. It was right on line, just a tad bit more power, and he would have gone home with a lot of money.
Yeah, when I saw that thing going, you could kind of check, you can see the arc of it.
Yeah.
I thought, that thing's going in. But not quite. Carmelo Anthony played well for the Knicks. Thunder played the Knicks. He had 19 in the first quarter. And he looked like he was going to be unstoppable, but then he reverted back to kind of, I don't know, he just didn't shoot as much. He missed a few. I think he ended up with 30 or something.
Mm-hmm.
But our guy, Westbrook, couldn't stop him.
Oh,
human dynamo.
Just plays harder than everybody. I mean, that's, Charles Barkley said, if you don't like Russell Westbrook, you don't like basketball. I think that's a pretty good point, because basically what he's saying is he tries harder than everyone else. He's not too cool to put his full effort into every single game and every single practice.
Case in point. I think it was in the fourth, or maybe it was the end of the third. Westbrook shoots a free throw and misses it, gets his own rebound, which is very difficult to do, and then ends up making a three on that possession, and that started the cascade of events to where the Thunder pulled away and had a pretty easy victory. But I thought, wow, you know, he missed the free throw, got his own rebound, and then he makes a three. That's just hustle, energy, effort, all those things.
And all the times that he takes rebounds out of the hands of guys like Kristaps Porzingis, who is 7'3", he's jumping up there and taking the rebound right out of his hands and then scoring over him too.
Yeah, really amazing to see some of that. There was a guy sitting right in front of me. He would have been just a little ways down from you.
Mm-hmm.
And he was kind of funny, but kind of not. He was always trying, he was saying things. And one of the players for the Thunder, his last name's Laverne. And so he'd be shooting free throws, and the guy yells, "Way to go, Laverne and Shirley," or something like that.
Yeah,
and then he kind of he looks at his buddies like, "What, you like that?" And no one really responded to him.
I was literally the only person in the whole section who laughed at that.
Yeah, I
didn't even know what it was a reference to. It just sounded funny.
That's the old show from the 80s.
Oh, no wonder.
Laverne and Shirley. Yeah, that was a famous show. They were like set in Milwaukee. So, yeah, he was making references back to things that people were like, "What? What is?" And then there's a guy up behind us a ways, this big guy, and he had this booming voice, and he had, like, running commentary. And
that was hilarious.
Yeah, he was actually a pretty funny guy. It was like an evening at the Improv. He was doing a one-man show up there.
He was talking to Carmelo about going to Cleveland or something. Yeah. Like, "I already got the tickets. Yeah. You're going to be a Cavalier."
Yeah, that's what he was saying. Because they might trade him over there. Who knows? That's one of the things. So whenever you go to a live sporting event, the sports is fun, but then the people around you, that's half the show.
Mm-hmm.
Just see what they're doing and what they're interested in. So and it's funny, too, because there was one guy that used to always sit kind of in the same area where I've sat occasionally, and he would always, I haven't seen him in a while, but he would always bring a blue bodysuit, spandex, and he's not a fit guy. And he would always, you knew he had it. He put it in his little backpack. And, like, randomly during the game, he'd disappear, and then he'd come back, and he'd have the blue bodysuit on. He's always trying to get on camera
Yeah. Or,
like, get something, and he did it all the time. And so I always knew him as the bodysuit guy, and then I saw him at a bookstore. I was just looking. I'm like, that's the bodysuit guy. You know, you see people in a different context, and it was awkward. I didn't know what to – like, I think we kind of recognized each other. But what are you going to say? Like, "Hey, you been to many games lately?" You know, so.
It's almost like – you don't think of those people as existing outside of the arena,
right?
Because you see them at their craziest at the arena, and you don't really consider that they might have a normal life away from that.
Right.
Like, whenever I'm at the games with my brother, I'm usually the guy making those types of comments, but I will not do it if there's people I know behind
right.
me, like you. Or oh. if I'm bringing a friend as a guest, like last night, I will not act silly.
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah, sorry I cramped your style there.
Oh, it's fine.
I had no idea.
No problem.
I had no idea that was happening.
It's usually a good thing when that happens, actually.
Well, yeah, it's like when you have two groups of friends that they don't know each other, but they know you, and if you all come together for some reason, and you're kind of a different person with each group,
yeah.
A little awkward.
It kind of is.
It does happen sometimes, all those social dynamics. Well, we talked earlier this week about that dam out there in California, and potentially having some problems. They had to evacuate a lot of people. And they say that the Orville Dam, it's a race to brace spillway as storms begin tonight, Thursday night. They say a foot of rain is possible. So it'll be interesting to see what happens there.
Yeah, it seems like they're pretty much in crisis mode, just trying to brace the dam as fast as possible, get people out as fast as possible. A foot of rain in California, you don't usually think of that because people obviously would consider Southern California first, but Northern California actually does usually get some rain.
Yeah, so that could be, maybe they'll get it fixed and it'll be okay. But anyway, they're having a race to try to get that taken care of. These are interesting numbers here. This is from CSN News. They talk about how many refugees and where they've come from and some of their background since the judge halted Trump's order. 60% of refugees that have arrived since the judge halted the order are from 5 terror-prone countries. So, we're not – it's interesting because there's this outcry from some to let people into the country. But if you look at who's coming in, it is a lot of people from these terror – more than half have come from these terror countries. And that should be concerning, I would think. I wonder – you know, I would think, okay, we'll keep track of all these people, and if there's a problem, go back and talk to the judge.
Right. Yeah, that's really what's becoming a pretty big problem is judicial activism. There is no doubt that the judge blocking that executive order is completely illegal because I looked into it a little bit, and basically the president can do whatever he wants to regarding immigration. Anything that has to do with the country's security, no judge should be able to stop him. And no judge ever tried to stop Mr. Obama from doing very similar things.
Yeah, that's a really interesting point that you bring up. I was thinking about this today. Does it even matter anymore who's the president of the U.S.? Because activism on the judicial level or just the media certainly is kind of dictating at least the story or the narrative of what's happening. You look at the headlines today, and almost all of them from your liberal sources, which are most sources, you know, White House in chaos, it's falling apart. I think the Washington Post had one that says, let's just admit it, he's not qualified. And they're just, it's just every single day they're saying these things. And I don't know how many people would stop and actually read all the articles. But if you just see the headlines and you think, well, there must be something to it, you would think it's an absolute disaster. I don't think it's as bad as they're making it out. And you remember when President Obama was leaving office, they said there was no problems with him. There was no crises or anything like that, no drama. That's a complete lie. It's just the media lied about it and covered everything up. And now they're doing it again, but only highlighting every little thing that they can find against the current administration.
It's definitely a coordinated attack. We talked about recently how one day or 2 days in the media, every headline you looked at had the word chaos in it.
Yeah,
that's not a whole lot of originality there. It's like they're all reading from the same script and attacking Mr. Trump in the exact same way. They already have their stories predetermined, and then they just find a couple facts that they think might back up the story.
Yeah, find a quote from somebody that agrees with them. But looking specifically at these numbers since that travel ban has been halted, they said there's been a total of 2,576 refugees resettled in the U.S. from around the world since U.S. District Judge James Robart's February 3rd restraining order. 60.1% of them, or 1,549, are from Syria, 532 from Iraq. Let me break this down. 532 from Syria, 472 from Iraq, 363 from Somalia, 117 from Iran, 65 from Sudan, all together equaling the 1,549. And so that's where those come from. 1,549 are coming from those five countries, Syria, Iraq, Somalia, Iran, and Sudan. And so those are the numbers. The only two countries that were on that list, the terror list, where people have not come in has been Yemen and Libya. And I don't know why. Maybe no one tried.
Right. That's probably the only reason, if they're letting them in from all those other places. That's really an influx, too. That's in the last couple weeks, basically.
Yeah.
And we need to realize that didn't even start happening until 2015. Mr. Obama waited about 6 years before he ever started letting people come in en masse as refugees like that. So where was the criticism of Mr. Obama for 6 years when he was not letting them pour in? Now Mr. Trump is trying to get back to how it was in 2014, not how it was in the 1800s. He's not going back to the dark ages or anything crazy like that. He's going back to 2014, where we didn't just indiscriminately let everybody come in, which is really dangerous.
Yeah, especially considering what some of these nations are involved in. They say of the 2,576 refugees to have arrived since February 3rd, 55.3%, or 1,424, are Muslims, 817 Sunnis, 132 Shiites, and 475 refugees self-identified simply as Muslim in general. So the more than half are Muslim. So that continues to fit with some of those trends that have been going on. They say of the refugees hailing from the specified countries of terrorist concern, Muslims accounted for the overwhelming majority of those admitted in all cases, except for Iran. Muslims comprise 99.6% of the admissions from Syria, 73.5% of those from Iraq, 99.7% of those from Somalia, and 93.8% of those from Sudan. Of the Iranian refugees admitted, by contrast, only 9.4% were Muslims, while just under 60% were Christians of various denominations. So when you look at those five terror-sponsoring nations, overwhelming majority, except for Iran, overwhelming majority are Muslims.
Which is, that is just an ideology that's counter to the West. And even if we leave the ideology out of it, we're not bringing in the best immigrants anymore. We're not bringing in immigrants who have any chance of really helping America become a better place. It's really about some corrupted sense of altruism, basically, where we're just trying to help everybody. If we really wanted to help them, we would stop the civil war in Syria.
Right. Yeah, stop the problem on the ground. You can't have everybody coming into the country. They have to figure out things on their own as much as possible. This is a trend that we've talked about for a while. It's a really weird thing. Facebook Live, you can stream live video, which people do. Most of it's probably benign, or, you know, it's not that big of a deal. But in some cases, it's pretty horrific. And this is, it continues to be an outlet for gruesome crime for some people. On Tuesday, two journalists were shot dead during a Facebook Live stream in the Dominican Republic. And then that afternoon, Facebook Live captured a separate incident where a 2-year-old child and a 26-year-old man were shot dead and a pregnant woman was critically injured. So the question that they don't know how to answer right now is, how do they control it? How does Facebook control these type of live streams full of violence?
That's really a tough question. They've had ideas about trying to have some sort of basically artificial intelligence that scans every single live video to see if there are certain giveaways that something bad could be happening. But how do you really do that? How do you decide, well, there's a gun in this one, so someone's about to get killed? It's pretty hard for artificial intelligence to know that.
Yeah, I don't know how they would ever figure that out. They couldn't show any movie trailers.
Yeah.
I know those aren't, you know, live in the same way, but it is interesting because people are horrified with these gruesome crimes. Rightfully so. But if you think about what Hollywood produces, in most cases, in a lot of cases, it's extremely violent, extremely graphic, or even just the stuff you'd see on television. And there's not an outcry against that. You know, I don't know, what was I watching the other day? It was a sporting event. It was a basketball game or football game or something. And they had a couple of movie previews. It was some of the most horrific things I've ever seen. Just the terrible, like, it's horror movies, right? And they've got to take it to the next level to be even more shocking. And, you know, we just, you get used to that, to like, you, oh, this is that movie, so you just turn it off right away. But the first time, you're not totally sure what's going on for a while. Where's the outcry against that? Those things are horrific, and you have kids watching those games.
The problem is people try to pretend like the violent video games and the violent movies have absolutely no impact on how people actually behave. A lot of those murders on Facebook Live, I would almost guarantee they're inspired by some sort of violent thing that they have also seen.
Yeah, and you know, the other thing too is, like, say if you're looking at a series of pictures on, say, like CNN or something, pictures of the week, occasionally they'll put up a warning screen that says, warning, this next picture is about to be graphic, and it's typically some sort of a war scene or something. Or they'll do the same thing, like if they have a news story and it's a video, they'll say, this is disturbing and so forth. And but in most cases, those things are much less disturbing than I think a lot of the movies are. Because, and don't get me wrong, I mean, it's all terrible, but real-life violence is kind of there and done. In the movies, it's stylized. You know, it's slow motion. You see it from 10 angles. You see it a bunch of times. And then when you see some of the real stuff occasionally, you're like, oh, well, it's terrible, but it's kind of over. Mm-hmm. You know, somebody shoots somebody, that's it. It's not like this big stylized thing. So I think in a lot of cases, the movies are far worse, but they don't put the same warnings on those as they do on some of the other stuff.
That's true. I mean, usually in a movie, the guy decides to make a 10-minute speech about why he's getting his revenge, and then he uses all sorts of methods of torture. He doesn't just get it over with and move on. It's just a sick display of violence and really satanic influences there.
Yeah, and I never understand why they make such a big deal about one thing being graphic and not the other. They're all graphic. I mean, don't get me wrong, there shouldn't be any of it. But they'll make such a big deal about, you know, this might be disturbing to you. I'm like, well, the stuff that they're showing on the commercials in between the news broadcasts are far more disturbing than anything you're showing on the news. And with the news, it's, I mean, if nothing else, a lot of cases, at least it's it is a real event that they're reporting on. So it's just interesting the way they try to separate fantasy from reality and say, well, it's fantasy, so it's okay.
Mm-hmm.
But it still is terrible, and it influences people to go do the real thing.
Yeah, fantasy starts out as a way to escape real life, but after a while, engaging in a fantasy becomes boring, so you try to merge fantasy with real life and basically act out what you might be seeing. They've also gotten really good with those horror movies or those previews where they make it seem like for 20 or 30 seconds almost that everything's normal, it's a really peaceful, happy type of movie, and then it just changes out of nowhere.
Right.
And so you have no chance to even change the channel a lot of the time.
Yeah, that really frustrated me. during the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
Because all of a sudden it's this horrific thing and you're trying to find the remote and, you know, and they led you to believe it wasn't that. And then they changed it on you. So, yeah, some really terrible stuff there. I don't know how they're going to try to control Facebook Live, but, yeah, that's an ongoing dilemma. On to happier news. You ever watch Price is Right?
Yes.
Sorry, not Price is Right. Wheel of Fortune. They're all the same to me. That's Wheel of Fortune. Yeah, Wheel of Fortune. Pat Sajak, Vanna White.
I'm actually struggling to remember what the point of the game was right now.
Spin the wheel. Yeah, yeah, spin the wheel. Then you got to solve the puzzle and, you know.
The word puzzle.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, that's right. Yeah.
So that game's been on for a long, long time. You ever wonder how old those people are, like the hosts?
They're probably really old, even though they don't really look too old.
Yeah, I don't know how old Sajak is, but Vanna White is turning 60 in a couple days.
Wow.
So if you've watched that show recently, you know that the camera never gets too close. They always keep it it back a ways. But it's just, you know, it's kind of strange because when I was a kid, I remember they were on TV. And they're still on TV. And I'm like, well, how old are these people? But anyway, I saw that she was turning 60, so I thought I'd share that in case you were wondering how old Vanna White is.
Ageless legends. They just keep on going, and it doesn't even look like they're aging, really.
Don't look too close. Don't look too close. How much is real? You never know. Fake hair, fake everything else. But yeah. So anyway, 60 years old, and I always wonder about those people. I guess they get fulfillment out of entertaining people, and I don't know. It is entertaining, and it is, I guess, fun. People get joy out of it. But at some point, you'd have to think, like, what do I do for, you know, I just, like, turn the button. All right. It used to actually have to turn the letters. There was more to it.
Mm-hmm.
Now she just pushes the, right. They light up. And so the job has gotten less difficult. It should be replaced by a robot pretty soon.
Yeah, she does at least have to remember. She has to memorize what the phrase is instead of, you know, kind of forgetting and pushing the wrong ones. I think I've seen her mess up once or twice, but it's pretty rare.
Yeah, I always, you know, whenever they call a letter and you see Pat Sajak and he kind of looks down somewhere, he's obviously looking at the answer. And I was, I'm like, how can he see it and they can't see it? And then, like, he's very quick to know if there's a letter that they called. And there must be a way where they show him that, because if it was just the phrase and you could read it, you know, you would have to think for a minute, like, what did you want? yeah, I think we got a T. You'd be reading it. So anyway.
It's so true. He is so fast with that. It's like they seem like they have pretty much nailed it down by now. They do it pretty seamlessly.
Yeah, and they're such an institution that if they changed hosts, I don't know that people would stay with it the same. You get used to the same people.
Mm-hmm.
It's like Trump or Radio Live. It wouldn't be the same.
True.
If we weren't here. We'll replay. We'll start doing Wheel of Fortune. They can start doing
like
this.
The Apprentice, too. Mr. Trump's not on there anymore. Arnold Schwarzenegger's on there. You'd think it would be a huge hit, and yet the ratings plummeted somehow.
Personality driven. Yep. Sometimes we've mentioned that you can notice some of the wars going on all around you all day with animals. Animals are fighting. It's a life and death struggle. Here's an interesting one. Australia's scary because of all the scary animals there. And this happened in Australia. World's number four most deadly spider attacks number two deadliest snake. Spider and a snake fighting. When have you ever heard of that?
Oh, that's just so lethal, too.
They had a video of it.
Oh, wow.
Which is pretty interesting. I wouldn't recommend watching it because all the guys filming it had some choice words for the battle. But it was interesting to just at least see the video. The guy says, growing up in Australia, I saw a lot of weird animal-based stuff, but nothing compares to seeing a red-back spider fight an eastern brown snake. And again, this snake is the number two deadliest snake. The spider is the world's fourth deadliest spider. The video, they say, seemingly shot at a car repair shop, shows the spider halt the snake in its tracks with its web and proceed to come down and bite it. So the snake, and it's not a small snake. It got stuck in the web, and the spider descends and then injects the poison.
So the spider won.
Spider won.
Oh.
They say the behavior is rare for a redback. They're known for eating insects and even small lizards that get trapped in the web, but eating a snake is an entirely different thing. And typically, the spider will inject its venom into the animal, liquefying its innards. There you go.
Wow.
Smoothie every day before returning to drink it. The juvenile brown snake didn't stand a chance. So it wasn't a full grown, but it wasn't small. It was a good sized snake. Sometimes here in Oklahoma, certain times of the year, we get those huge spider webs. And you're driving in the morning and the sun hits them, and it's like from a mailbox to a tree. You can catch a child in that thing. And I was wondering, like, what are they trying to catch? Birds or what?
I know. Well, apparently they can because they caught a snake.
Yeah.
I thought that would be way too powerful to get stuck up in a web.
Yeah, it's amazing. But the web took care of it, and then the snake really didn't have anything to do, and the spider just comes down, injects him. And as soon as he injected the snake, it was about, I don't know, 2 seconds, nothing was done. You could see him kind of twitch, and that was it. Very venomous. And then you got all the guys in the back with the Australian accents, giving play-by-play. again, not the best language, but they didn't want to intervene. They wanted to see what happened.
It's pretty amazing how they were all there ready to film it and capture it on video or capture it with play-by-play like that.
They didn't even seem nervous about it. I mean, you've got two of the most deadly creatures on Earth battling it out. I think I'd be like, why don't we just kill both of them?
Hope they don't join forces and turn on you.
Yeah.
Get away from that.
Yeah, maybe the snake will become like a super snake. Super spider snake. It's happened to Spider-Man.
Yeah, it did.
So, anyway, I thought that was just interesting. It's always strange when you see some of these different animals, their worlds collide, and you would think, the snake would have no problem with a spider. Not in this case.
Not if it's a surprise attack like that.
Yeah, crazy. Boy, that's just... Yeah, it makes my skin crawl a little bit. Here's an interesting one. A couple of quick ones before we get to your story, Grant. This is the hazards of eating out. I spared the really bad ones because some are pretty bad. But this was just some examples people on Reddit put up for some weird experiences they had. This one guy went to a restaurant, got a burger, very excited to eat it. He took a bite, and there was plastic in there. They didn't take the plastic out from between the cheese slices.
Oh, yeah.
And he went back to the kitchen, and they were watching a football game. So that can happen. You got to pay attention. This other person went to a restaurant on their birthday. They found the restaurant found out, and they surprised the guy with a huge piece of cake, and then they billed him for it.
Oh, okay.
Happy birthday. That'll be $7.
So he went into the restaurant and they gave it to him while he was there?
Yeah. He didn't come in. I don't think he didn't say he came in and made a thing out of it. They just found out, or maybe, I don't know if he mentioned it, but they found out his birthday. They said, oh, great, we'll bring you a piece of cake. A lot of restaurants do that. It's a freebie.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of times you go out to eat on your birthday because you get a free piece of cake or something. And they gave it to him, but then they charged him for it.
That's one of those things where you absolutely have to tell that it is going to be charged to you. One time I went to IHOP and I got orange juice, and then they kept on giving me refills, but it was like $3.75 for every refill.
Oh, no.
And so I racked up $20 on orange juice alone somehow.
Wow. Yeah,
I was.
You would think, because if they keep bringing it, you'd think they'd say something.
Yeah.
Like, hey, if you want another, just so you know. Yeah, that's strange.
Like with sodas, that's what they would.
Yeah.
They would keep bringing it out, but it wouldn't cost you more every time.
This other person said they have a deathly allergy to tree nuts, where they'll actually start, they can't breathe. And so the restaurant brought out a big salad, and there was different types of nuts all over it, and they said, sorry, I can't eat this. Take it back. Oh, no problem. They take it back. The person mouths down on the salad when it comes, because it was 15 minutes after everybody else got their food. And all of a sudden, I can't breathe. There was a couple of nuts they left in the bottom. And it turns out that the chef back there didn't believe the guy and said, put a couple in the bottom. We'll see if he's allergic.
Oh.
Yeah, he was, and he almost killed him.
Oh, no.
How about just take the nuts out?
Why do you have to be so rude about it?
Yeah, he was offended. He almost ended up killing the guy. And this last one, so this person says, we got home and we realized that neither of us had paid the bill.
Oh.
You ever do that?
I have started walking out, and then I sat back down because I realized I was about to inadvertently dine and dash.
Yeah. I mean, if it's a group and you're not sure who's paying, I mean, it could happen.
Yeah.
There was one time, well, say if you go to like Red Robin or someplace, you kind of order and pay right on that little kiosk thing right on your table. And I always feel weird about it because I just walk out and I'm kind of looking around like, I did the thing, like the machine. Is that okay? Am I okay?
Don't tackle me.
I did pay for this. Yeah, that's one of the weirdest things I ever had happen as far as eating in a group. Sometimes you'll get somebody steps up to the plate and they're like, I've got it. I'll take the check, So we were eating out, and I was really hungry. It was a big group. And so when the waitress comes over, the guy says, there'll be one check this evening. And I was like, wow, okay, guy's stepping up. But I felt bad. I'm like, I wanted to get a few extra things, but I'm like, I don't want to stick the guy with this. So I didn't get everything I wanted. The meal comes, I eat it. And then he gets the check and he's like, okay, so yeah, I guess just figure out what you owe me. And he wasn't paying it. He just wanted us to give him cash so he could put it on his credit card.
Oh, come on.
To this day, that burns me. Because I'm like, I wanted like two or three other items I did not get to save that guy, and he wasn't even paying.
Just out of courtesy.
Just out of courtesy.
Yeah, yeah, sometimes I've done that too, and then the person will pay out of a surprise, like at the very end. And I didn't. I thought that maybe it was happening, but I wasn't sure.
Sure.
So I didn't get very much either. So it's kind of the same situation.
You have to just kind of man up and be like, I'm paying tonight, just so everybody knows.
I'm paying for everybody tonight.
Get what you want, though.
Yeah.
Get what you want. Trumpet Radio Live. If I'm paying, you get what you want.
No one holds back.
No.
That's right.
I'm Dwight Falk, Grant Turgeon, and Abraham Blondeau stopping by. Abraham's over there all smiles. We have to get to Grant's story, though, so you can't. Do you have a quick one?
Oh, I was going to say, my dad taught me that in Canada, if you invite someone out, you have to pay for them.
Oh, really?
That's what I've always done, too. If I invite someone, it's understood.
It kind of feels that way, like maybe that's what's happening. It's hard to know.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
Yeah, so that's just whenever I invite people out, I assume I'm paying. So if you don't get invited out, that's because I can't cover everything. But that's why is that and not all the time. Sometimes people want to pay for themselves and stuff.
I took you out one time.
Yeah, you did.
I paid for it.
Yeah.
You and your girlfriend at the time, now your wife. See, it worked out. That's why you got married.
Yeah.
Because I paid the bill.
Your intervention. So.
Yeah.
I'm glad we're all in agreement here. This is a sensible social practice that I think should become a norm. If you invite someone, you just pay.
Yeah.
It evens out. You'll get invited by someone else, and they'll pay for you. It evens out.
Yeah, but then you're taking them to like the low restaurant, and you want them to take you to Mahogany.
Right.
Yeah, keep taking everyone out to Sonic.
Yeah.
Well, that's not what we had.
It's an all-you-can-eat buffet. I'm paying, so get what you want. Grant, you've got a story for us. This is a big, big thing that's happening. I think it's driving a lot of people probably a little crazy. It's from The Spectator, the athlete as activist. I am good. I'm a good athlete, and I have opinions, and I'm going to tell you about them.
And I know more about it because I can put a ball through a hoop.
Sure.
I know everything about these different important issues. This guy says something like, have you ever heard someone say, I wish actors and actresses would speak out more about these different issues like politics and social issues? He said, me neither.
Right.
And yet it's happening all the time, and they feel like the world would just be a better place if we would all listen to them and heed them as they berate us.
Right, but they don't want to hear the other side.
No.
They don't want to hear a counterpoint. They're not looking for a healthy back and forth. They just want to tell you how it is.
Right. They think it's now their duty to set us straight on who to vote for and what to believe, this article says. That is something that has made it very difficult to continue watching sports personally, because you know every single time that someone speaks out, it's going to be with a radical left point of view, because the media will praise them for it as being bold and courageous and compassionate and inclusive and diverse and all these other things. As soon as someone speaks out with a conservative point of view, their careers are actually threatened.
Sure.
Like Curt Schilling, for example, the Baseball Hall of Famer who got fired from ESPN for tweeting a couple things about what he believes that ESPN doesn't agree with. Obviously, ESPN has the right to do that, but they wouldn't do the same thing if someone on the other side were tweeting something similar about their points of view.
No, yeah. Well, they encourage them to talk about it on a lot of their programming. Yeah, that is it is very interesting when you see that happen. I think I think some athletes, they want to be considered a Muhammad Ali type, where he got a lot of praise for standing up against things. But I'll tell you what, if you look at some of that, I don't think he needs a lot of praise there. He just didn't want to go to Vietnam, so he started protesting, from what I understand, and tried to stand up for all these other things. But he got a lot of praise for it, and people kind of looked at him as some sort of this athlete activist that was to be admired. And I think this new generation's trying to do that.
Yeah, this new generation probably just needs to realize, though, that there were also a lot of people who were extremely alienated by what Muhammad Ali did.
Yeah.
Not everyone was a fan of him speaking out and, you know, bringing things beyond sports into play. People pay to watch you play, and that's really about it. Or to basically commentate on the game you played, not on society at large.
Right, yeah, there's it's just an understanding of what your job is. You know, you're getting paid to entertain people and play a sport, and not to tell them what to think. like you said. So it is interesting. I wonder if it's going to hurt some of these. Like, they use the example of Steph Curry. He's been pretty outspoken. Under Armour is the company that sponsors him and his shoes and so forth. But then the Under Armour CEO came out and said he had some positive things to say about President Trump, and Curry didn't like that. So it was a little bit of a battle within the company there. And I wonder if it'll hurt Curry's bottom line as far as selling his shoes and such.
It might, but it might also just hurt Under Armour in general, because so many people are also going to be against the CEO, when all he did was he stayed in his lane. He was only talking about business practices, right, and said that a pro-business president is good for business. Stephen Curry should have heeded that admonition, that example, and stayed in his own lane, which is to play basketball. That's all he's supposed to do. We don't need him to basically bully the person who's paying him $15 million a year for a shoe deal.
Yeah, and his shoes have taken some flack because they're not great looking in some cases. he released a couple or one pair last year, and everyone was making fun of them. It was all over the internet because they, I don't know, they just look like shoes that older people would wear walking around the mall. and they're supposed to be these hot, you know, new shoes that everybody wants, and people were like, ah.
He took it so personally too, because for some reason basketball players, like, your shoe is your identity.
Yeah.
The thing that covers your feet is so crucial that he thought it was like a personal attack against him, pretty much.
Yeah, well, they were strange looking. They just weren't really. And so I don't know. maybe he should not worry so much about the activism and talk to somebody that knows about making shoes. A little better design team maybe in there.
Yeah, it would be fine if at least they were not basically bullying the other side. If they were not, you know, without saying it, they're basically saying, well, you better agree with me or else you're a horrible person. That's kind of what the message is. Anyone who might want to stop illegal immigration just hates immigrants in general. All these different types of insane messages where they didn't put much thought into it. You see that now with six Patriots players refusing to go to the White House when Mr. Trump invites the whole Super Bowl winning team. It's supposed to be a nonpartisan friendly activity, and yet they are using it as a political platform.
Yeah, I think a lot of it's kind of like middle school. It's just what's popular. We're going to do the popular thing. I don't think most of those activists would of their own stand up and say something if it wasn't popular. And you know, they're kind of acting like they're going out on a limb, but they're not. They're just trying to fit into their group.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't think it's any different than than the popularity contest.
Yeah, once again, we need to turn to our usual culprit, which is the media, because they started this whole thing back in the 90s when they repeatedly scolded Tiger Woods and Michael Jordan for not speaking out on issues affecting African Americans, which this article points out it was basically code in media speak for blaming Republicans for all the ills associated with Black America. And finally, after 20, 25 years, they've won the propaganda war. They've made all these new athletes now speak out on all these things because they know that maybe they'll be scolded otherwise.
Yeah, which is so interesting because I guess they think, well, they're role models to the kids, and so they should be saying some things. But, you know, if you think about the qualifications for, let's say, some sort of job in politics, which, again, I don't really know what they are. Usually you'd be good at business or a few things like that. But you never look at a guy and they're like, well, he's a pretty good jump shooter. I bet he's got some thoughts on foreign policy.
Yeah.
Like, they just don't, they're just two different worlds.
But they seriously think that that makes them qualified somehow. Like, if you're a good mind when it comes to strategizing in basketball, like Grumpy Greg, then you should always be allowed to talk about these other things as well. That's just not the case. He doesn't know much outside of basketball, it would seem.
Yeah, so all the lines are blurring as far as what people are doing and what their jobs are, and then their activism. So there's been a few that have stepped out here, and of course, again, I think it is just it's the popular thing within their group, and that's why they're jumping up to say something.
Yeah, it's basically becoming necessary to not even read any news about sports anymore, because invariably it has a ton of political undertones, or that's the whole point of the article now. Just watch the game and ignore all the other stuff. That's what I'm trying to do.
It's getting harder and harder. That's from The Spectator, the athlete as activist. They should have another one, the activist as athlete.
That would be pathetic. It's pathetic right now.
All you protesters, I want you to do a three-man weave. What now?
My only word of advice to all the athletes, if they really feel passionate about something and they want to make a difference, they should follow the example of Pat Tillman and actually go and do something.
He was killed for it, too.
Yeah, not just keep their million-dollar jobs and not really do anything. Actually, like, so they might donate money and that sort of thing, but Pat Tillman paid this ultimate sacrifice for something he believed in. I think that's a good example for athletes to follow if they think they want to do something else.
Yeah, he was a man of action, so there's nothing you can really say about that. They have tried to be a little negative about that in some cases.
They're trying to paint it in a bad light, like he made some sort of mistake and that's why he was killed in friendly fire.
Right.
But I mean, he was a man of action his whole life, even before he went into the military. He turned down a massive contract, at least for compared to what he was making, just to stay with the team he was on. That's another thing we'd like to see with athletes, is a little bit of loyalty.
Yeah, that would be a nice change of pace.
It would.
That'd help communities root for people a little better if they stuck around. Mm-hmm. So yeah, you can find the rest of the Spectator. Grant, thanks for bringing that to us.
Thank you.
You're listening to Trumper Radio Live here on 101.3 KPCG, and we're online at kpcg.fm and a live link at thetrumpet.com. I'm Dwight Falk, and Abraham Blondeau is here, of course, and hockey guys. You don't hear a lot about hockey players having takes on things. Maybe they do. I don't follow hockey, but
not really. There have been a few in the past. Most of it has been about Canadian politics, French and English speaking, and Europeans. It's not necessarily about national political issues. It's more about just certain issues within the league. The only person is Don Cherry. He's a commentator. He used to be a coach for the Boston Bruins. He speaks his mind about everything. So he's not associated with a team, or he's just a commentator, but he has commented quite a bit on certain things, and he's very conservative. He just keeps going.
Yeah. Yeah. Outspoken. Here's an interesting story before we get to your story. A 27-year-old becomes first woman to visit every country in the world. That's pretty remarkable.
Yeah.
Cassie De Picole, 27-year-old traveler from Connecticut, just became the fastest person to visit every country in the world, also the first woman to visit every sovereign nation. She left for her world tour in July of 2015, and on February 2nd, she visited Yemen, the 196th and final country on her list. Her entire journey around the world took 18 months and 26 days, smashing the previous record of 3 years and 3 months. I thought you'd go around the world in 80 days.
Yeah. Well,
without stopping.
A mouse could do it.
Yeah. But she actually stopped at the countries, I guess. And she's now completing the paperwork to be officially recognized by the Guinness Book of World Records till the next one comes along, knocks you off. Throughout her journey, she boarded over 255 flights. She planted trees in over 50 countries. What about the other 100 and how many ever?
Yeah.
She didn't want to plant a tree there? I don't know. And went through 5 passports. She spent between 2 and 5 days in each country. I bet she's got a lot of frequent flyer miles.
Yeah.
She probably doesn't want to travel, though, for a while, I would think. I mean, that's amazing. You just have to be kind of a unique person that really likes that, because that would be really taxing and strenuous to do that.
Yeah, it'd be really educational. I think people would be excited to go to all these different places. But also, I mean, I just came back from a trip, and a very short one, and that was enough for me for the time being. So, and I would just hate to see the price tag for a trip like that, too.
Well, you know, maybe it's a little different if, because say like the trip you went on, or most people, like the travel is just to get somewhere.
Yeah.
And so that's kind of the necessary evil. But if your whole focus is just to travel, and that's what you're doing, you know, maybe the mentality is different. You know, maybe you don't worry so much about a flight that's late because this is what I'm doing today. So I don't know. But that's a lot up and down in the sky. Yeah. It's 255 flights.
Yeah, I think some people like traveling, I know, and it doesn't bother them. The more you do it, I think you just, this becomes part of your lifestyle. But I imagine that wherever she calls home is going to be, she'll be there for a long time.
Yeah. I wonder how she paid for it, but You've got a story here. This is all the way over in the UK. Spectator.co.uk says, for the sake of Britain's constitution, will everyone please shut up? Wow, it was rude. That's a rude headline. It says, the Speaker, Prince Charles, and opinionated judges are all treading on dangerous ground. What's the story here from the UK?
Yeah, I thought this was interesting because we have, I think there's more headlines about America's constitution and undermine the rule of law in America, but we're starting to see the same trend in Great Britain, but it's a little different. And that's because Britain has an unwritten constitution, and basically all that means is that there is no codified law like the constitution where it's a list of amendments, a list of rights, and that's what everything is based off of. In Great Britain, the unwritten constitution takes all the judgments from courts, acts of parliament, different laws, precedents, and then that's the constitution. So it's more of a history book of the judgments and of traditions that govern how what you do and why you do it, rather than a clause in a constitution like most countries do it. And so why this is coming into question and what this article addresses is that some people aren't supposed to have opinions, or they can, but they have to be quiet because there is their role in the Constitution is not written down. And so if they cause too much trouble, it could cause a constitutional crisis in which we then have to define what their role is, and that could really change everything or just cause a lot of troubles in how the government functions.
Yeah, that's it does actually tie in really well to say what we were talking about with the athlete as the activist. You know, everybody, at least in America, it seems like, you know, they people really relish their freedom of speech, which is understandable. But everybody thinks that I shouldn't say everybody, but many think that their opinion really matters and it's really important and they must tell you how they feel. And not everybody's carries the same weight. It depends on who you are. It depends on your position, your level of expertise or understanding, wisdom, if we dare say that. So it is interesting when everybody's talking how nobody can be heard, right?
Yeah, exactly. There's so much noise that your one wavelength doesn't matter as much anymore. And that's in Great Britain, this can cause huge troubles because it could completely undermine the trust of the people in the parliament, and that's what we're seeing. And there's three main sections the author identifies, and the first is the monarchy. And Queen Elizabeth, she is celebrate her sapphire jubilee, and she basically no one knows her actual political opinions,
right, yeah.
On things because that's her role in government. In theory, the monarch has absolute power. They can veto anything the government puts out if they so choose. However, in a British constitution, there's also something called conventions. And a convention is not a law. It's just the way things are done. It's just a tradition, and we follow those traditions. So the fact that there's a prime minister is a convention. There's no law saying there's a prime minister. It's just the way things have been done for hundreds of years, so they continue. The same thing with the monarchy. Technically, they have the most power. But under conventions, they don't exercise that power. They automatically sign anything Parliament passes, and they don't state their opinions in order to influence policies of the government. And so Queen Elizabeth has done a great job of that. But the main criticism here goes to Prince Charles, who's been very outspoken on global warming, the Chinese government, the refugee crisis, I think Putin in the Ukraine as well. And so now, his views, I think some of them have been very good. Like, someone should say something, but he's not the person to do it. Because if he became king recently, his opinions could influence who he calls a form of government in Great Britain. It could influence how Parliament acts, if they go to war, if they don't. And so, as we've seen in the past, the monarchy can have a huge sway on politics. And so, by doing that, it could cause a constitutional crisis where people say, like, oh, well, we don't really want the monarchy anymore. Let's get rid of them.
Yeah, and that's, in the U.S. for a long time, some voices have talked about an evolving constitution. they want it to change. Let's change it. You know, and so here, when you have a situation where it's not actually law, but it's just traditions, that's the movement, right? Everybody wants to get cast off the old traditions, and they feel like they know better now. And the old dead people didn't know, you know, what we were facing in our time today. And so that is definitely a thought here in the U.S., and it seems like in the U.K. as well, there's some change there.
Yeah, Britain has led the way in socialism and in many other changes politically, even more so than the United States. But one thing that has remained of the old days has been the monarchy. And I think it is a vital institution because it does check against wrong change. Because the monarchy is so old, the queen has met with every president and prime minister since Harry Truman and Winston Churchill.
Wow.
So there's such a wealth of experience there. She can actually help people, help the government, because there's a lot of wisdom there. But not in a way where she's publicly saying things. It's done through just counsel, through like a friendly relationship.
Yeah, that takes a lot of discipline to not say things. To keep quiet publicly. I mean, I was always impressed, if coming back here to the U.S., I was always impressed actually with former President Bush after President Obama came in, because it was such a radical change. And President Bush took such a beating in the media, a lot of cases pretty unfairly, I thought. And to just take it, you know, I'm sure privately, you know, he probably had a few days where he maybe didn't like it. But publicly, I never recall him saying anything. And I really respected that because... you know, there's that poll. You want to say something especially if someone's, you know, speaking against you, or you have an opinion, you want to put it out there. It takes a lot of restraint and a lot of wisdom to not say anything, at least publicly.
Yeah, exactly. And that's, I think Queen Elizabeth is a picture of that restraint. And then the other two he focuses on is the Speaker of the House. And the Speaker has to be absolutely neutral, because the Speaker, he sits in the chair at the front of Parliament. He decides who speaks, which debates are done in Parliament. So he influences the whole function of government. And it's only through him that government can function. So the one today, it's the same Speaker who said Donald Trump is not welcome in Parliament. That was completely irresponsible and not something he shouldn't have said. And so now... that's influenced Parliament when he should be completely neutral. It's not his job to say those things. That's the government's job if they deem it so.
And even there, I wonder, is that really his opinion, or did he just know that people would, you know, praise him for saying that? I have to wonder.
Yeah, well, that's actually what he addresses in here, is that the Speaker of the House has to have a personality where they don't want to be the center of attention, because you're not supposed to be. You're just a neutral administrator. And so if you want attention, and a lot of lords and MPs have said that his personality is like that. He just wants attention from the media and other things, and that's why he's saying these things. So his name is John Bercow, and so there's a lot of criticism. I doubt he'll be there much longer, because since his views are known, if someone's pro-Trump in the government, is he going to let them speak over someone who's anti-Trump,
right,
with his views? And even if he is impartial, people will now question his judgment. And so he's completely eroded his own credibility in that office. And then the last is the judges, who have the same problem, where in Britain, the Supreme Court acts differently because it's unwritten constitution. But if they state their opinion, then that will influence their decision. Same like a Supreme Court justice. They can be very activist and biased, you could say. And so the more that they're become politicized and the more activism they show to one side or the other, they can completely undermine government, like with Brexit. I think that was a good decision on their part. But what if they handled that miscorrectly? That could have caused huge problems for the nation, for the future of England and all, and with the people thinking their will was broken. Right. And so we're seeing more and more judges talk in a very irresponsible way. And so the combination of these three things could spell a lot of trouble for Great Britain, and could cause a lot of trouble, like we're seeing in America, with how the executive functions with the judiciary and all that sort of thing.
Yeah, and what's the feeling? What's your feeling? It's probably not... My guess would be that it's not going to go back to the way it was in the UK, but it's going to continue on this path of a lot of people speaking that maybe shouldn't be.
Yeah, I think that's the only way, is that people aren't happy with the status quo. And so I don't think there will be huge changes in the British Constitution, but I think it will become more and more divisive to where you have people completely sacrificing their duty and the well-being of the nation for their own opinions. And I think that's going to be the we're going to see more of.
Yeah, well, and even in the U.S. here, I mean, now it's gotten to the point where I don't even think people in politics or, you know, people that are really, say, radical left in particular, they don't even really try to change laws. It's just disregard them.
Yeah.
I'm not going to do it. I'm going to do something different. And yeah. It seems like that's kind of that thinking is sort of permeating the West a little bit to where I was. Grant and I were talking about it earlier. Does it even matter who the president is if the media is going to spin it their way and shoot down everything you do and attack you from every, you know, side, and judges are going to strike down orders? And does it even matter who's there? Because it seems like, or intelligence is going to be leaked that hurts your administration. There's a whole shadow government happening, right? Doesn't it seem that way?
Yeah, it's basically the election doesn't matter because they won't be pleased until they have someone who they want in there or someone they deem acceptable or whatever. And so they're already talking about Trump being impeached.
Yeah.
Like already. And
there's a headline today in the Washington Post. They said, just admit it, he's unfit.
Yeah.
Well, based on what? Yeah. 6 days, seven days, 8 days, whatever, you know, whatever they're looking at their time frame there. I saw one where they talked about what he's done the last 6 days. Obviously, he's been in longer than that. But it's like it's such a small sample size. And what are you forgetting about Benghazi? Are you forgetting about, you know, there's so many things that happened in the previous administration that nobody cared about. And now after a few days, they're like, unfit, get him out. It's crazy.
Yeah, well, I think Donald Trump is a man fighting a wildfire with a pail of water, like a bucket of water, and that fire was caused by the previous administration. Not all of it. There have been plenty of other mistakes, but all these issues internationally, domestically, they were ignited by the Obama administration, and he's trying to deal with it in a different way, and they're not giving him a chance. And what they're forgetting is that there's still 50% or more of the American population who want to give him a chance, and so they're playing with an even bigger fire.
Yeah, it's really an interesting time. You can read more of that if you want to. That's at spectator.co.uk for the sake of Britain's Constitution. Well, everyone shut up. So rude over there. That's it for Trumpet Radio Live. Myself, Dwight Falk, Grant Turge, and Abraham Blondeau. Have a great rest of your Thursday. We'll see you back here tomorrow.
You're listening to Trumpet Radio, 101.3 KPCG.